problem and dark matter problem are very important. They are very part. They're a very big part of the content of our universe, and that was what motivated me to start thinking about these issues. What I would like to do is to face this problem, try to face the problem from the point of view of Einstein equations, and then see whether the structure of general relativity may have something to say about these problems or not. And I will tell you straight away what I'm going to do. The idea will be to study some kind of matter fields or fluid, which can be defined with no metric. I will explain why I'm interested into that possibility. And then I will show that that particular fluid, after I turn on back the metric, will behave like dark energy for large scales and as dark matter for at small scales. The crucial ingredients in this whole analysis will be gravitational dualities that I will, they are known. It's a known type of duality for gravity when the cosmological constant is different from zero. And there's also some nice analogies with symmetry breaking, which are very useful. They're only analogies. I will not try to say that this is exactly is a symmetry breaking process, but they've been very helpful in giving ideas on how to proceed with idea. Oops. I just want to mention very quickly that I've been working with in this problem with several people, and in particular, this is of course like it's the holy grail of cosmology, and we would like to be able to calculate the anisotropies in this framework. And that's some work I've been doing in collaboration with Pedro Ferreira and Costas Cordis, who is from Perimetra. Okay, the G equals zero, or the easiest way to look at for the first time that this was considered was in the context of a field-wide formulation of general relativity. I'm going to go back to the metric in the next slide, but this is a very easy way to understand what the idea is. If you write down the equation of motion for gravity in a first order formulation and using the tetrads, then you can see, and it's completely trivial, that if you set E equals zero, E is the Wilbon, which will be then related to the metric. If you set E equals zero, then these two equations are immediately satisfied. But this is a completely trivial statement. Now, as trivial as may look, it did not go unnoticed, and in the early 90s, a lot of people were playing with these ideas and trying to develop it further. And in particular, Giddens, this would be very relevant in what I'm going to say afterwards. He considered the possibility that E equals zero was some kind of unstable solution, which would go down eventually to a stable vacuum with a non-zero expectation value, and then fluctuations around that minimum would be general relativity, standard general relativity. Now, what is the key point that I want to make here, and which will be really the point of the rest of the talk, is that when you set equal to zero, the connection, which is the other part of the Einstein theory, becomes completely unconstrained. So there are no equations. This is normally the Einstein equation for the metric. This is the equation for the connection. But when you set equals zero, this is completely the generate solution, and the connection disappears from the equations and becomes completely random. It's not at all constrained and become a sort of random field. This field then is a field that you could say it existed before the metric was created. If we could understood the Big Bang as the creation of a metric starting from G equals zero. This is precisely what Giddens was trying to do in that paper. Now, this is the analogy with symmetry breaking. This very well-known analogy where something similar happens, if you have a set of spins in the presence of an external field for some temperature bigger than the critical temperature, then as you remove the external field, eventually the spins become completely random. So this is very similar to what happens with the relationship between the connection and the field bind. When you remove the field bind, set it to zero, then the connection becomes completely random and not defined by any equations. Now, we know that the very interesting thing about this phenomena is that if you are below some critical temperature, then you can remove the field and there will still be correlation between the spins and the order state will still be there. Now, what is the key point in order to have this situation, which of course is physically more nicer than that one, is that there are interactions between the spins. So the spins interact with each other, and then they can remain in this ordered state, even if the external field is removed. But the question is, can we find an interaction for the spin connection such that, as I remove the metric, that field will still satisfy some reasonable equations? And the answer is yes. And this is actually a very old term. This was written by Eddington back in 1922 or 23, I don't remember exactly. So suppose I consider this action. I have here standard general relativity, and then I add this piece, which will only depend on the connection. This does not see the metric anywhere. This is a purely connection term that satisfies all the principles, all the symmetries of general relativity. So I can consider this, to say, corrected general relativity. Now, in the metric formulation, it's a little bit more tricky to see that when g goes to zero, again, this completely disappears, but it's still true. So if I set g equal to zero here, then the connection, which will be described, it's not really the Christopher symbol, it's just the connection, will be described by the Eddington action. So in that sense, I could make sense of this fluid, which will have some decent equation of motion after the metric is removed. Now, what happens now is that actually, if you add that term, you're doing absolutely nothing. The theory is exactly the same, it's still the same. And the only thing that you will be doing is to renormalize some of the coupling constant here. In particular, there's one lambda one, lambda zero. They both are cosmological constants. And the reason is that there is a duality transformation relating these two actions. This is also a very, very old and very not that well known relationship. But if you start with a Palatini action and then you do the standard thing of Barrow with respect to the connection, and you find this relationship between the connection and the metric, and then you feed it back into the action, and you get the purely metric Einstein-Hilbert action. But actually, if the cosmological constant is different from zero, that's crucial, then you can do the opposite, and you can vary with respect to the metric, and then this equation of motion is also algebraic for the metric in terms of the connection. So you can feed back now this equation back in here, and we get this Eddington action. So these two actions are related by a duality transformation. They're actually completely equivalent. So that means that when I added this term to that one, and if g is different from zero, and if g is invertible, of course, then actually this one describes exactly the same physics as that one. I'm not really creating anything new. Now, let's go back to the analogy of spins. In this physical phenomenon, there's the opposite of what we did before, is that we have the spins in an ordered state due to some external field, and then the external field is removed. Actually, a far more interesting situation is when these spins go into an ordered state spontaneously. So they really go down the road in this potential, and they, because again of the self-interactions, they can get a non-zero expectation value. Now this is not an external field, this is the average produced by these spins which become ordered, and eventually they will all be ordered with a non-zero expectation value. There's no external fields here. This is a purely intrinsic property of the spins. So the question is, now that we knew the analogy with the metric, can we do exactly this phenomena in the gravitational side? And the answer is, well, yes, assuming that you are willing to follow the idea. So let's consider now the metric will be, again, the external field. But now I will add that something that I will call a spontaneous connection, which is not related to the metric. It's completely independent from the metric. Completely, just like in the average of the spin density can be different from zero, not because there's an external field, but simply because of a spontaneous symmetry breaking. I will consider this field. And now I will consider the coupled system. So this term here is again Eddington's action. This will be Eddington action for this field. K will be the curvature, the Ricci curvature associated with K. There's no metric here at all. So this, if this term was not here, that will be exactly the same as before. The only difference now, this depends only on the metric, and this depends on the external field. Those will be the couple so we'll never get something interesting. But now there is a very nice way to couple them, which is by adding the metric here, and then you get a sort of Bohn-Ninth action, which will describe gravity coupled to this connection.
R there depends only on G. Okay, so you've assumed that.
I could still add here a Palatini form and then a connection and a new Eddington field for the spin connection, but as I showed before, it's not going to give me anything relevant. So I'm going the other way now. Okay, just very briefly,
this action, it can be proved that it can also be written as a big gravity theory of this form. So it's a theory with two metrics. This again is related to the fact that these theories are related by a duality to gravity, pure gravity. So the field C can be transformed into a new metric, and this will become a sort of big gravity theory, a theory with two metrics. These theories have been recently considered by some people. There's been quite a lot of activity in a completely different context, in the context of massive gravitons on big gravity theories. Well, anyway, what is this theory good for? So as I showed you at the beginning, this has something to do with dark matter and dark energy. And that was actually the initial motivation. I'm not going to go through the details, but if you now look at the Friedman problem in this theory, you can put the metric with the symmetries of the Friedman-Rosen-Wolken model. Then you can do the same for the C field. That is pretty easy because actually C, by a duality transformation, can be transformed into a metric, and therefore imposing the symmetries into a metric is very easy. And you just plug it into the equation, and this is what you get. The dots here represent the Friedman evolution, adding dark matter and adding dark energy. So that means that's why for small times, the scale factor will behave like t to the 2/3. This is physical time. And for large time, you will have the acceleration, the exponential of the Hubble constant time t. The red line describes the evolution predicted by this Eddington. This is not Einstein, it's Eddington. Eddington Bohn-Ninfeld, it should be Einstein Eddington Bohn-Ninfeld theory, where no extra components have been added. So this fluid, in a very natural way, behaves like matter for small times. So with the equation of state here is p equals zero, and behaves like a cosmological constant for late times with a equation of state of p equals -4. Now, I wanted to check at different kind of problems at the galactic, and just because it was so easy to do it. Dark matter, dark energy is not relevant at this scale, but dark matter is very relevant at this scale. Astronomers are very familiar with this kind of rotation curves, which are seen in most galaxies, or probably all of them. And this goes to a flat region. And the typical situation is here is it is split into the disk, and then the bulge, which is the center, this center with a lot of mass, and then the dark component, which is this line here. So all galaxies have a dark matter density, which will contribute to the rotation curve with a curve like this one, which is approximately flat, asymptotically flat. Now, if you do exactly the same, so you take the action I wrote before, and then you look for solutions with spherical symmetry, it's very easy, and you just have to go through the process, and what you find is that the rotation curves, I'm including here only the dark matter or only the Eddington fluid. I'm not adding the visible matter. I'm not adding anything extra. I'm only looking to this curve, and this is what you find, which looks really similar to those. There's two people now in Santiago trying to really see whether these curves make sense or not. This is only visually that they look nice. One thing that can be proved that they are asymptotically flat, which is a property of. Okay, to finish, let me conclude with two comments. Duality is very important, and it was first discovered in electromagnetism, but magnetic charges have never been observed. I just think that it would be great if dark matter and dark energy, which has been observed, not directly, but indirectly, would be associated with sources to a dual gravitational theory. So just like monopoles are sources for the dual formulation of electromagnetism, in this context, dark matter and dark energy would be seen as the sources for this dual gravitational field. And the other thing I wanted to is to say is to go back to the picture that Giddens made in his paper back in 1991, I think. He speculated with the idea that the Big Bang is a transition from a state of a topological manifold with no metric, or topological in that sense. So it's a manifold with no metric, and then you put the metric. The metric breaks the symmetry. So before you have a fully diffeomorphic invariant situation, and then you put the metric, that breaks breaking the symmetry. And then he speculated with the idea that that would be the Big Bang. So in this, this is a very misleading picture. Please don't take it seriously. There are many, many paradoxes that will arise if you take this too seriously. But the idea, more or less, is that at G equals zero, you can define this field, which does not need a metric. It's a fully diffeomorphic invariant theory. It does not need a metric. So this will be some sort of primordial field. And then as the Big Bang happens, or the metric is created, then you end up with a full theory, which will be Einstein relativity, normal matter. And then there will be the remnants of this field, which could have been already there. And then this coupling is just is the most natural coupling, a Born-in fluxion. I don't have any good reason to say that that has to be the way it will couple to the metric, but it is just a reasonable option. The last comment is that C will not couple, at least not in an easy way, to normal matter. C is a connection. C does not couple to normal matter. And this is also a known property of dark matter. So from that point of view, it's also attractive. Okay, thank you.
Yes. Spherically symmetric solutions in this thing?
Yes, but not exact. I mean, if you're asking me about black holes,
well, yeah,
you were going that way. And unfortunately, I solved equations only perturbatively,
but
in this constant 1 over L squared. I do not.
There's no exact solution.
No, no. The equations are quite complicated.
Is there a Birkhoff theorem?
I don't know. Yes.
So this duality between these two actions is classically true. But once you go to the quantum theory, if you add two independent fields, then you're going to have fluctuations of both fields. And the quantum theory is going to look completely different from the classical, from the initial Einstein theory.
I think the first thing is we need to treat this field as a quantum, as a topological quantum theory. That would be the first step. Now, that's complicated enough.
Let's say you want to write Einstein theory as half of the usual Hilbert action plus one half of this action,
both
as depending on the.
The whole point is
You're trying to say that both actions are the same, which is true classically because you insert the equation of motion back in.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, this duality transformation is not at all guaranteed that it will survive from this action.
So you don't even know whether you have gravitons in this theory. It's not even clear with the theory of gravity.
No, I need to derive a gravity. You need to expand around flat space, which in this context, I have no idea what that would be. So in the dual picture, yes, you can do it. But the dual picture is valid, provided that it's invertible. So far you run a closed loop. So the idea is to not assume any metric and then treat this theory and then try to understand the quantum behavior of that theory. This is a very, very interesting question. I'm afraid I don't have anything else to say. Yes?
What sense metric is created from this primordial field? Is it like induced gravity or Gimino is the composite field of?
I think you're going a little bit beyond what I actually said. I did not say that. Okay, I call it the primordial field, which would be the first one that everything would come out eventually. But I have absolutely no evidence of such an idea. I have, being honest, I can understand the picture with no metric. I mean, this is a topological field theory that's very easy to understand. This we have second order field equations. You can write them down, solve them in some particular case. This is quite easy. I don't know how to quantize this theory, or at least I have not tried. This picture is quite easy. Over here, it's all, again, very easy.
Once you have the metric, the metric is normal, this is just an action, and then you can do everything you want with an action, whether difficult or not, whether this, of course, will not be randomized, etc., but it's non-stop, not the transition. And that's why I call it here a big bang. You know, this is, of course, the most difficult part. But I think it's that actually, this is what Giddens was speculating about, trying to understand the big bang. Instead of a transition from nothing into the universe, the transition from the topological manifold into the remaining manifold. The way I always put this is that in books in mathematics, they have the first chapter is topological manifold, and the second chapter remaining manifolds. Why have, you know, could we not consider a physical transition from one into the other, a process from the topological manifold into the remaining manifold? Let me also add here that the horizon problem, this very well known problem, would not arise in this picture. If this picture was right, then there's no horizon problem because there are no light points here. So there's no, well, first of all, there's no beginning. But as I said, this is very misleading. You should not think of time running upwards. I mean, time will start running upwards from somewhere around here. That would be fine. But over here, there are no light points. There's no sense of future or past.
No
causality, exactly. So the horizon problem is just not present. It's like, it's solved by definition. No, it's not a problem.
I'm not trying to say that inflation will not be necessary. Inflation solves many other problems. But that's one. That problem will not arise in this picture.
Let's take that from the top.